know about you, but time is moving way too fast right now. You could barely get anything done. You could sit down on your phone for like 5 minutes, and I'm telling you, an hour and a half will go by quickly. This is the season where you get to see how spiritually retarded Negroes are in this country. Graduation season and prom season. It is the most embarrassing time of the year. Negroes running up and down aisles of graduation ceremonies. They carved out a little celebration patch in graduation where Negroes can walk over there and start dancing, hooting and hollering. I seen parents act like they're in church, sprinting around graduation ceremonies. It's embarrassing. And people make excuses for it. Oh, you know, they work so hard, they pay so much money. Fam, most of these graduation ceremonies are high school. Ain't even college, it's high school. The public school education from elementary into high school into college, it's a Masonic institution. The curriculum, the core curriculum, is based on Freemasonry. The seven subjects that we learn, I think, art, math, science, language, and other subjects, that's our core curriculum. I guarantee you that from the time you went to elementary school, high school, and into college, to some of you, and even into masters and beyond, I guarantee you learned European culture. I remember I took I was an art major, called graphic design. At the time, it wasn't called graphic design, it was called integrative arts. We had to learn like Roman basilicas. We had to learn the Catholic temples. We had to learn all the arts of European culture, Roman and Greek. We never once learned anything about African culture, African heritage. We never once learned anything India, their architecture or art. We don't learn anything about the Moors and their architecture and art. We don't learn nothing about that. It's strictly European culture that we learned. They teach us different forms of math. Every generation is a different way of doing math. Addition, subtraction, division. They do it like that so the parents can't help the children. So the children have to learn new ways to do the same problem 100 different times based on just the school. So you're being taught obedience and understanding and knowledge from school and not from your parents. So your parents are made to look dumb because they don't know it, because they learned it a different way from where you learned it. And then you assume like, okay, I need to get higher education too, because obviously my parents aren't smart enough to help me in this world. So I have to learn it this new way, which is just the old way reimagined. So I really don't get why parents act like they're in church, like they got the Holy Spirit when they see their children graduate a Masonic institution. Even the cap and gown is Freemasonry. If you look that up, that's what it is. And then this whole thing with prom, flashing money. I mean, these kids don't have jobs. Why are they flashing $2,000, $3,000? Why are they throwing the money up in the air? And they don't have no job. It's not even guaranteed that they have a future after high school. They're doing the whole elbow spread, the arm spread of money. They're coming out of their houses with these elaborate entrances like WWE. It's embarrassing. And these suits are just getting more and more elaborate and corny. These loud suits. I mean, you remember like the old school Zoot suits? That's what it looks like to me. These old school Zoot suits. I mean, the movie Malcolm X, when they put on those loud suits. That's what it looks like. We literally went back into mockery. That dandy period, that's what those prom suits are. That the dandyism period was a way that slave masters could show their wealth in their slaves by making them dress elaborate like that. And then Negroes took it on an art of its own. And that's where we get Dapper Dan from. That's all it is. It's just the generation next is the whole Dapper Dan movement, but it's really called dandyism. They made this part of the Met Gala one year. And it was the year that was Super Bowl 59. 59 and Met Gala 59 was, in numerology, Negro, cotton picker, slave. The N-word, nigger, has 59 in it. It has it on the front end and it has it on the back end. And in between, it's the G is 77 in numerology. So it's a mocking. So when they see, specifically for some reason in the South, Florida, when they see dandyism being spread on these young teens, they just laugh. Our enemies laugh at us. That's what they do. They laugh at us. They laugh. And then they're wearing Jordans and sneakers with these suits. I mean, and then the women act like they're getting married. The mothers act like they're marrying off their daughters when they go to prom. It's like, this is it. It's like they know subconsciously that their children aren't going to be married. They're going to either be baby mamas, baby daddies. They're going to try or attempt to be rappers or entertainers. When that fails, they're just going into the system, funneling into the system, because no one in their right mind is going to college participating in foolishness like this. They guarantee that. They know they don't have money for college, but it was like they'll spend it all on prom. And from there, those kids will do whatever. And you see how the resources are drying up. The opportunities for jobs are drying up. You're seeing more and more nepotism, fraternal nepotism now than you have ever seen. They're not going to hire anymore kids coming out with 4 point whatever GPAs and all that, unless they're tied into a Black Greek organization, York Rite, Scottish Rite Freemasonry, or DeMolé, which is what Bill Clinton was. Bill Clinton was a DeMolé, which is just like the Boy Scouts of Freemasonry. It's going to be an interesting time. It is, because that whole purge, those movies that came out, it's going to be right on point. And the thing is, the purge isn't going to affect not so much the poor, because the poor people don't have much. They already know the poor people don't have much. They're going to go to where the money is. And it's going to be devastating for those who are in upper middle to middle class. They are the ones that are going to have to protect coming from the top and from the bottom. They're in the middle. They're in the middle of the poor and those who have it. And you remember the first movie of The Purge. It wasn't the poor Black man that they were afraid of or they had to worry about. The homeless Black man that was sneaking around, they didn't have to worry about him. You know who they had to worry about? They had to worry about their neighbors that did not like them, that were in the same social and financial class as they were. But some reason, they just didn't like them. So they all got together and thought they were going to take this family down. That's what it's going to be like. It's going to be the haves versus the have-nots, but it's also going to be the haves versus the haves, because they want more. They want more sustenance. The Most High is not playing when he said that he was going to seize the inhabitants of this land with a stupor and have a stupor of heart. That means a state of unconsciousness, a state of not being able to think before you act. They're just going to act. Anyway, a brother asked me in the comment section about Leviticus and what that has to do with fat and eating steak. Bro, you can eat the steak. You can eat any meat. Just because it has fat on it does not mean you don't have to eat. You don't eat it. It's not lawful to eat. You can eat it. You cut the fat out. I know y'all not out here eating ribeye steaks with the fat still on it. I hope y'all not doing that. Because the verse that he brought up was, do not eat the fat of ox, lamb, sheep, or whatever. Yes, you can eat it. And another thing I wanted to talk about, and me and his brother had a conversation in email about, and I kind of misunderstood where he was going with it, but then I thought about it. I was like, yeah, I did remember saying, this is before I was on this calendar. I remember saying that there were no Shabbats back to back. You can't have two Shabbats in a week. I think I said that before. When it came to the feast day, specifically Sukkot, there are Shabbats back to back, because you have a Shabbat on the 14th, and then the 15th Sukkot starts. So when you get to the next Shabbat, which is on the seventh day. On the eighth day, you're supposed to look at the Feast of Sukkot as a Shabbat as well. That's the only feast day that there is a Shabbat on the back end. There's two Shabbats on the front end and on the back end. Now, when it comes to new moon, this is before I understood that new moons were a Shabbat, and that is in Amos 8. I'm gonna read up to 5. Thus has Adonai Yahuwah showed unto me, and behold, a basket of summer fruit. And he said, Amos, what do you see? And I said, a basket of summer fruit. Then said Yahuwah unto me, the end is come upon my people of Yasharel. I will not again pass by them any more. And the songs of the temple shall be howling in that day, says Adonai Yahuwah. There shall be many dead bodies in every place. They shall cast them forth with silence. Hear this, O ye that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail, saying, when will the new moon be gone, that we may sell grain, and the Shabbat, that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit? Now, again, if you have the Sefer, either it be the desktop version or your digital version of your phone, search new moon and Shabbat, and you will see how closely related those verses are in the same verse. Those two topics are in the same verse. They're mentioned a lot together, new moon and a Shabbat, from his new moon to his Shabbat. So when it says here, when will the new moon be gone that we may sell grain? That means they weren't selling, just they weren't buying and selling on the new moon, just like we don't buy and sell on the Shabbat. So that's why I start understanding that the new moon is also a Shabbat. So when you go to the last, I think, week of the month, it's like I said, it's 29. It changes from 29 to 30. So when you get to the last Shabbat, which is on the 29th. When you get to the last Shabbat, then, which is the 28th, sorry. When you get to the last Shabbat, it's on the 28th, and the months alternate 29 and 30, you end up with the Shabbats being close together. Like you have about 1 to 2 days to get your offerings in order, and then you have another Shabbat. So the Shabbats are back to back, but you think it's during the week because you're stuck on the Gregorian calendar. That's what you mean. You mean it's, oh, as soon as, like, say if the last Shabbat on the 28th and you have the 30th is the first is next, and you go 2 days, like, okay, now, okay, it's the first of the new month and it's still in the same week. That's because we're still stuck on the Gregorian calendar and with that particular type of thinking. But if you remove that, you'd be like, okay, I'm about to reset when the new moon comes. Even though it's pretty much a Shabbat, it's still a new moon. It's not just a regular Shabbat. It's a new moon. So sometimes, yes, on the Gregorian calendar, the last Shabbat and the new moon, or the first day of the month, do and can happen on the same week. So I think he was misunderstanding me when I said that about you can't have two Shabbats in the same week. Because those who are in the solar calendar, their Pesach starts when there's sometimes a Shabbat on the Friday and Saturday, and then they turn around and do another Shabbat when the Most High says that, oh, this is a Shabbat on the last day. They end up with more Shabbats in 1 week. Like, for instance, Sukkot. There's Shabbat on the front end, there's a Shabbat on the 14th, Shabbat on the 15th, and then their calendar, in a solar calendar, they end up having a Shabbat in the middle of the week again because it's on a Friday and Saturday. So they go across again, and then they have a Shabbat and then another the eighth day Shabbat. So it was just too many Shabbats on one feast day, I thought. So that's why I knew that the calendar didn't make sense. The ones that they do in the solar calendar, which is in March or April, it doesn't say anywhere to start anywhere of the calendar based on the equinoxes. It just doesn't. I think people misunderstand when it says the moon and sun will be equal. Fam, the moon and sun can be equal any time of the day based on the time that you're looking for. But I know it's closer to, I think, the winter time it happens, and then the around the spring, summertime, it happens again, where the moon and sun are equal to each other, or the night and day are equal to each other. But it doesn't say anywhere in scripture to truly do that. He told Moshe, this is the first day of the first month for you. This is the first month for you. That's what he told him. He didn't say, hey, this is because the sun is in the moon and the night and day is equal. This is where we were. He didn't tell him that. And the same thing with those Friday evening to Saturday evening Shabbats. Doesn't make sense either. Because when I went back and looked at Jubilees 50:12, and it says that do not, let me pull it up. Yeah, Jubilees 50:12, and every man who does any work thereon or goes on a journey or tills his farm, whether in his house or any other place, and whosoever lights a fire or rides on any beast or travels by ship on the sea, and whosoever strikes or kills anything or slaughters a beast or a bird, or whosoever catches an animal or a bird or a fish, or whosoever fasts or makes war on the Shabbats. So whoever who slaughters a beast or kill a beast. Now, if you go to when he first implemented Pesach, it says, kill the Pesach on the 14th day at evening. Why do you think he said at evening, kill the Shabbat or kill the Passover, the Pesach lamb? Because from the day, which is in the day, till evening, you can't kill any animals. So that's why you had to wait till evening. So how can Shabbat be from evening to evening? So if he told them, like, okay, store food the night before, fam, they didn't have any refrigerators back then. So if you're doing from the evening to evening, that's too long of food being left out, of blood being left out. I don't think if we learn and understand what when he meant with these laws about being clean, and not just for the man's aspect and the woman's aspect, but also for an animal aspect where they would have to drain blood. They would have to do all this beforehand. That's almost 24 hours before they could get to eat that this meat has been sitting out for almost a whole day. And you got flies, you got insects, you got other things going on. Why this food is being left out unrefrigerated. And then Yahusha said there's 12 hours in a day. So how can a Shabbat be from evening to evening? That's more than 12 hours in a day. So moving on. I wanted to be thorough in my approach when it came to when I said that the other nations knew the histories of who Yahuwah fought for. When the enemies tried to conjure up ways to destroy the Israelites, there was always somebody from the opposite side. It wasn't prophets or Israelites saying this themselves. It was counselors who was counseling our enemies and telling them, hey, if you do this, this is what's going to happen, and this is why it happened. Their God chooses them for this purpose, and he has always saved them. And I'm going to get to why this is important for the Gentile to know. So I'm going to start at Yasher 67, 45 to 47. And Bilam said to the king, of all that the king has counseled against the Hebrews, will they be delivered? And the king will not be able to prevail over them with any counsel. This is Bilam talking to the king of Egypt. This is what they were trying to figure out and what to do with the Israelites, because they were multiplying and being fruitful, and they wanted to use them for hard labor. They didn't want them to rise up in fear of them rising up and taking over their country because they were growing. They didn't want that. So they wanted to keep them in perpetual slavery. They wanted to keep them busy, and they didn't know how to deal with them, because obviously they had counselors that tell them, like, look, you're not going to be able to prevail over them because this is how they are. For if you think to lessen them by the flaming fire, you cannot prevail over them. For surely their Elohim delivered Abraham, their father, from Ur of the Chasdeim. And if you think to destroy them with a sword, surely Yitzhak, their father, was delivered from it, and a ram was placed in his stead. And if with hard and rigorous labor you think to lessen them, you will not prevail even in this. For their father Yaakov served Laban in all manner of hard work and prospered. Now that's just one man. Now I'm pretty sure there were some lazy Israelites from the time of Abraham to the time we are now. But they hear of one man, and one man's deeds was an image or was a stereotype for all of us. You remember those old cartoons, those old racist cartoons that America did and make it, they tried to paint us as lazy human beings because we didn't want to work for free? I know you've seen them. Like, go back to those old 1920s, 1930 cartoons where we were sitting around eating watermelon and acting slow, moving slow, talking slow. They wanted us to work for free, and they got mad why we didn't do it. But we worked hard. We were out in the sun from sun up to sundown, beaten, trodden underfoot. But we out there worked. This country don't get built if we were lazy. The White House and the whole entire sugarcane industry would not be what it is if it wasn't for us working hard. But to go back to Abraham, so they know this story from maybe decades before. They've heard of this story of Abraham escaping the fires of Nimrod. So obviously, they know that their God is a generational God, that he's just not picking one person out of the bunch, that he's picking a specific bloodline. Jasher 77:32-33. And Zipporah answered her father, saying, "Surely you have heard that the Elohim of the Hebrews is great and awful and does wonders for them at all times. He it was who delivered Abraham from Ur of the Chasdeim and Yitzhak from the sword of his father, and Yaakov from the angel of Yahuwah who wrestled with him at the ford of Yabuk." Again, they've hearing these stories about one bloodline. Three men, they've hearing these stories. What Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov did for us was give us a stamp of approval by the Most High Yahuwah that this man and this God that we serve is loyal, unwavering. Yehudith, I mentioned her last episode, Yehudith chapter 5, verses 8 through 20. "For they left the way of their ancestors and worshiped the Elohim of Evan, the Elohim whom they knew. So they cast them out from the face of their Elohim, and they fled into Aram Naharaim and sojourned there many days." Abraham was cast out because he didn't want to serve the idols of Terach, his father, which were the 12 idols of Babylon, which is the reason why we have the 12 zodiac signs that comes from Babylon. "Then their Elohim commanded them to depart from the place where they sojourned and go into the land of Canaan, where they dwelt and were increased with gold and silver and with very many cattle. But when a famine covered all the land of Canaan, they went down into Mizraim and sojourned there, while they were nourished and became there a great multitude, so that one could not number their nation. Therefore the king of Mizraim rose up against them and dealt subtly with them." Subtly. Again, we go back to the Garden of Eden. Subtlety. This is how the woman was tricked, by subtlety. They didn't take the tree of knowledge, the fruit from that tree, and shove it in her face like, "Eat, eat, eat. Don't matter what happens to you. Just eat, eat, eat." They didn't do that. They approached her subtly. This is how a lot of people are being led astray through various doctrines when it comes to the truth. It's through subtlety. "Therefore, the king of Mizraim rose up against them and dealt subtly with them and brought them low with the laboring and brick and made them slaves. Then they cried unto their Elohim, and he smote all the land of Mizraim with incurable plagues. So the Mizraim cast them out of their sight, and Elohim dried the Reed Sea before them and brought them to Mount Sinai and Kadesh Barnea and cast forth all that dwelt in the wilderness. So they dwelt in the land of Amorites, and they destroyed by their strength all of them of Chesbon, and passing over the Jordan, they possessed all the hill country. And they cast forth before them the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, and the Shechemi and all the Girgashites, and they dwelt in the country many days. And while they sinned not before their Elohim, they prospered. And while they sinned not before their Elohim, they prospered. Because Yahuwah hates iniquity. The Elohim, they says, the Yahuwah that hates iniquity was with them. Hates sin. So when did the Most High change and say he don't no longer hate sin? That he nailed sin to the cross? When has he ever said that? But when they departed from the way which he appointed them, they were destroyed in many battles, very sore, and were led captives into a land that was not theirs. And the temple of their Elohim was cast to the ground, and their cities were taken by the enemies. But now are they returned to their Elohim, and are come up from the places where they were scattered, and have possessed possessed Jerusalem, where their sanctuary is, and are seated in the hill country, for it was desolate. Now therefore, my Adonai and governor, if there be any error against this people, and they sin against their Elohim, let us consider that this shall be their ruin, and let us go up, and we shall overcome them. Easy. You want to be successful? You want to not be, you know, oppressed? The commandments. Do not do iniquity. Do not do sin. It's very simple. You want something from the Most High Yahuwah that you can't do for yourself? Worship him. Praise him. Make him your heart. Make him your husbandman. Make him your Ishai. And then he'll give to you what you deserve. I think that's very simple. I think it's a simplistic approach. The Most High is very simplistic in what he does. Very. It's us as human beings mar it up and scar it up because our emotions get in the way. We're in this world. We're in our fleshly bodies. We're not in our full Ruach bodies. We're in our fleshly bodies and the things that we want before it's time. We don't see what's on the other side of that door. We don't see the doors that he's opening and closing for us. We only see what we know from 5 feet in front of our faces. I think that's important, especially when it comes to blessings, being patient, being steadfast, and being consistent. The Most High wants to try us through consistency. And I say that's the only way you could truly serve him. You cannot be lukewarm with him. You can't be hot and cold. That's inconsistency. To be zealous is to be fervent for the Most High Yahuwah. That means when you reach a state of zealousness, that means even if you slip and fall, it is not a major slip and fall. And what I mean by that is if you're so zealous to do all these ordinances and statutes, it's certain things that you fall victim of because you just haven't done it before. For instance, doing the whole unclean thing, that now that somebody brought it up, now I'm going to participate in doing the whole unclean and separation. And already we messed up because I got to pay attention to not putting stuff on the bed, not touching her, letting my clothes be somewhere where her clothes ain't. So when she's touching stuff, it ain't defiled, or making sure I'm washing my clothes and washing myself, it being unclean too, even like all that is being so zealous that you're going to make mistakes doing something you haven't done before. Being hot and cold is you forgetting a Shabbat. Or you're not doing the ordinances and statutes, you're doing them whenever you feel like it. You forget a feast day, or you forget an ordinance on that feast day. That is not being zealous for the Most High and making mistakes. That's just being lazy and inconsistent. That is what he's talking about being lukewarm or hot and cold. Or double-minded. That's what it means. That you're not really putting him at your, you know, seeking him with your full heart or your whole heart. Yehudith 5:21-24. But if there be no iniquity in their nation, let my Adonai now pass by, lest their Yahuwah defend them and their Elohim before them. And we become a reproach before all the world. And when Achior, I guess, had finished these sayings, all the people standing round about the tent murmured. And the chief men of Holofernes and all that dwelt by the seaside and in Moab spoke that he should kill him. For, say they, we will not be afraid of the face of the children of Yasharel. For lo, it is a people that have no strength, no power for a strong battle. Now, therefore, Adonai Holofernes, we will go up and they shall be a prey to be devoured of all your army. So his counselors out here saying, like, man, don't even matter what they say. It don't matter what they say. They're not a strong people. They're hiding up there. They have no army. And that's what, at the time of Yehudith, that's what they were doing. They were just up there. They didn't have any sin or any iniquity because they had just may have came back from captivity and they dwelt in peace. This is during a time, a long span of time where they were in peace, where no one sinned and they were just chilling. And now when they seen the threat of Holofernes, they were all scared and worried because they didn't know what to do. They truly lived in a long period of time of peace and tranquility. So they didn't have an army ready. They didn't have anybody ready to defend them because they were chilling. They knew that, okay, if we are good, the Most High will not send anybody or any nation to us to destroy us. So they were really, really good. So when this threat came, that's when they all fell apart and like, oh, what should we do? What can we do? What do we do? And it took Yehudith, who was a widow, to come down after fasting multiple times during her widowhood and be like, I'll take care of it. I'll go down there and I'll entice him to lay with me and I'm gonna cut his head off. So it ended up happening the way the Most High wanted it to happen, where Yashrael didn't even have to lift a finger. They didn't have to prepare for war. They didn't have to prepare their sons and their men for war. But that is the reputation that comes with us. And you think they don't know this today? You think they don't know this reputation today? You think they don't know who we truly are? They would have to in order to successfully steer you away from your pride, steer you away from your glory, steer you away from your blessings and your promises. They're your promises. They can't be removed. The Most High said he does not change. His promises, blessings, loyalty, his vengeance over you and his inheritance does not change. It's you who fails to tap into that power. Not him, it's you. He is waiting for you to come to him. Not the other way around. Not the other way around. It's you through being consistent is what gets you rest and peace and joy. Now, this also plays into the Gentile being grafted in. If you understand what Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov did for the nation of Yashareel, you would also understand in scripture that the stranger and the Gentile were amongst the Israelites. And we were supposed to treat you as we would treat ourselves. If you are following the same way that we are following, you get the same protections. You get the same loyalty. You get the same peace and joy through the obedience and consistency of following the scriptures. The Most High separated us, yes, but he always reminded us, when you have a stranger within your gates, this is how you treat them. It says in the book of Numbers, there is one manner of law for you and the stranger that sojourns among you. So if it's one manner of law, it's also one manner of promises, blessings, peace, joy, the same vengeance over your soul and ruach as the nation of Yashareel. Yochanan 17:11-19. And now I am no more in the world, but these are in the world, and I come to you, Holy Father. Guard them by your name, the same name which you have given me, that they may be yakad as we are, that we may be one as we are. I think this is where Christians really get the whole thing, the whole doctrine or theology that Jesus is God and Jesus created the world and God and Jesus are one person in that way where it ain't two separate people. Because it didn't make any sense. Why would, if it be the same person that came down, this is what atheists love to bring up, that God came down and then crucified himself just to defend himself from himself in order to save us. And they say, oh, it's illogical to think that way. But their theology, the reason why they're atheists is because they listen to Christianity, and Christianity doesn't know what it's talking about either. Because why would the Father come down as the Son and then have conversations with himself as the Son to a Father if he is the same person? People don't understand that. They just try to erase the Old Testament because they are in fear of these laws, statutes, and ordinances being poured out on them, which it is and will be in the last days, as a standard, as the bar to who truly gets saved. But they teach Christian theology that these laws, statutes in the Old Testament and the way that God did these things in the Old Testament is no more, because now he's come down as a human, as Jesus Christ, and is laxed with all of his law, statutes, commandments, that all you have to do is just love thy neighbor. And most Christians are not even doing that. Most Christians aren't even loving thy neighbor or protecting and helping their neighbor. They're not. They have wrapped their theology up in a political stigma, a stereotype, a caricature that forces them to go around talking about this is a Christian nation. It has never been a Christian nation. It's been Freemasonry wrapped up in Christianity, a denomination of Christianity at the time where everybody was a Protestant. Now, the leading denomination, I forgot what he's even called at the top of my head, but now most pastors are this denomination now for some reason. Not Baptist. I can't think it over the top of my head. It's not Seventh-day Adventist. It's, I can't think of it right now. I'm not going to stop to look it up anyway. But most pastors are this for some reason, because one of the doctrines is speaking in tongues. So that's, they choosing a denomination that's, that it's going to confuse more people what they think the fruits of the Holy Spirit, which is heavenly baptism. We're doing these mass baptism rituals, either in the lake or in the sea, but doing mass baptism, mass immersions in their church, and then talking in tongues, which is just gibberish, and then falling out, jumping around and screaming and crying and passing out, or being slain in the spirit or drunk in the spirit, as they say. Pentecostal, that's what it is. It's Pentecostalism. That's the major or leading denomination of Christianity in these churches, is Pentecostalism. Anyway, while I was with them in the world, I guarded them in your name. Whose that you gave me, I have kept. And none of them is lost, but the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled. The only one that is lost is Satan. The only one that the Most High has not given Yahusha to save is the son of perdition. While I was with them in the world, I guarded them in your name. Those that you have gave me, I have kept, and none of them is lost. If you are supposed to be awakened, it's because you are his. You are the sheep that he went seeking after. You are the one. I can go back to a vision I had, and it was really weird because it was a vision at the time where I was coming off of ecstasy, and I was into astral projecting. So before that, I was able to astral project in the middle of the day. So I was doing nothing at a time where, like around COVID, you couldn't do anything, go anywhere anyway. But during that time, I was always sleeping. I was napping a lot because I was trying to get into astral projecting. And I was astral projecting, going to different realms and all this, being tricked in witchcraft, basically. And there was a time at night where I was doing it again, and I could feel my body levitate. And then all of a sudden, I shot up into the highest of heaven where the stars were. And then I was sat down, and then a lion, a majestic lion that was glowing, and a man that had, it had to be Yahusha. He had a beard. His hair was short cropped. He had not sackcloth, but he had a belt around, like the dress that they wore back then. He had a belt across, like a rope belt almost. And he walked. He didn't even pay attention to me. He was just walking. And while he walked past me, the lion's chest split open and milk poured out. Now, I didn't know what this meant until I read the Pseudepigrapha. It was the prayers of Solomon. And it talked about this milk of righteousness. So it really struck me in my heart. It struck me in my ruach, where I was tearing up. Because I found the answer. Because the milk coming out of the lion, which lion is being Yehuda, is the righteousness of Yehuda. The righteousness of the lamb. So it poured out on me and I woke up. And then from there, that's where my journey started. I didn't turn righteous 24 hours after this vision. It was a buildup. It was the Most High, like, okay, you're going to the left a little bit, let me move you back to the center. You're going to the right a little bit, let me move you back to the center. It was like that. Sometimes you would have to smack me on top of my head and make move back over here. Because it was the time I was still doing drugs. I would sit on the couch coming off a good ecstasy, a 72-hour ecstasy run. I would be going to sleep, and then he'll hit me with another vision. He put me like on a swing, and he held me up above the seawater. So when I looked around, there was nothing. There was absolutely nothing. Everything was flat, and it was an ocean for miles, miles, miles. And the sky was clear. There was no cloud in the sky. And so this, where I was sitting on this platform, it was just like dunking me, like a Ferris wheel. So I was on a Ferris wheel, just sitting on this bench, and I was being dunked in the water, being brought out of the water, dunked in the water, being brought out of the water, dunked in the water, being brought out of the water. This is the Most High saying that you are in two different worlds at the same time. Now, you need to wake up and start doing my works and do my works and be consistent. You can't be talking about scripture online and teaching righteousness and then you're still doing drugs. That's how he woke me up. That's how he was like, all right, I got to do this again. This is how he kept me in line. And he had me understand what he was trying to say to me without actually saying it. So, and it says, and now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. So how can 3-point-some-billion Christians be hated? I mean, Christianity is not really hated. It's mocked, but it's not hated. It's tolerated, but it's not hated. Only 1% of this population truly hates Christians, and that's Israelis. You can do a really quick surface search and see how the Israelis feel about Christians, which is really weird to me that Christians would promote Zionism when Zionism hates Christianity. They only tolerate them because they need them to keep the people asleep and knowing that the people over there are the true people. So until they control everything, until they truly have a hand on all of the laws and justices and judges in this country, which is going to happen any day now. Once they have that, they won't need Christianity anymore. They won't. When they get ready to have the Antichrist comes out and he gets to have power, they won't need Christianity anymore. This is why they had the Noahide laws in 1992, I think, signed by George Bush. It was supposed to be a day of remembrance for some Shabbat Lubavitch leader. It was some rabbi that they gave this day. It was the same day as Earth Day, which is weird. That's also weird to me. The same day of Earth Day, they made the Noahide laws a day of remembrance or a day of education, they call it. So that's them telling you, you better start learning what these Noahide laws are. In these Noahide laws, they don't stand for idolatry. They believe Christianity is the height of all idolatry. They tolerate Islam for a little bit, but it's Christianity they really have a problem with. And because they don't have the numbers of Judaism as they do the numbers of Christianity, they can't really come out and do what they want yet. But it's bubbling. It's going to get there. They've been taught by the Talmud that Jesus Christ was a magician out of Egypt and that he was born from a Roman soldier. That's the story that they know. And that he's boiling an excrement. They're not talking about the Most High Yahuwah's son because they know who he is. They know that's not the same person. They came up with this myth in order to, again, lawyer their way away from judgment. So if they make Jesus Christ white and they make the background story of something completely alien to the real biblical story, this is how they, again, this is how they hide their deceit, their subtlety. They know they're not going to be able to do anything against Yahusha. They know that. But they want control. And the only way you can control is to control the narrative. This is why I say that these land locations and where these biblical cities are were changed because this is their influence, their subtlety. I just learned the other day that the term Middle Eastern or Middle East was a colonial concept, because anything east of Britain was the Middle East. This woman talked about how that she sees America not as the West, but the far West. Because she and people laugh at it, but when people talk about the Middle East, no one laughs. But the Middle East, the term came out in the 1900s, was a colonializing. They colonialized the term Middle Eastern, is what I'm saying. They made that term up. So when people say, "Oh, Jesus was Middle Eastern," that is a lie. That term don't even exist, and the people in that region didn't exist at that time. Especially not Israelites. So if you're being hated for the truth, you're on the right path, because you are truly foreign to this world. And it says, "I pray not that you should take them out of the world." Here, this is Yahusha saying, "I pray not that you take them out of the world." Just like Yahuwah never took Abraham out of the world, he never took Yitzhak out of the world, he never took Yaakov out of the world, because they were so righteous and so pure and so obedient and so consistent. He didn't take them out of the world. The world was way more harsher then in their day than it was to us, because then you could just really kill at random. You had kings, monarchs, wars. It wasn't like you killing people with drones and bombing buildings and shelters and stuff like that. No, it's people meeting in the middle of a valley or some distant field with 30,000 to 100,000 people battling against each other. Then you had the victor going through villages and cities and towns, destroying women and children like it ain't nothing. It's way more harsher then. And the Most High Yahuwah didn't take them out of the world for fear of their death. He protected them. I pray not that you should take them out of the world, but that you should guard them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them through your truth. Your word is truth. As you have sent me into the world, even so I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctified myself, that they also might be sanctified through the truth. They don't talk about these scriptures in churches because they know it ain't the truth. That's why they go to these theology seminars and seminaries and colleges, online colleges, to get their degrees in religion and theology. This is why they do that, so they can talk away from these scriptures that talks about the truth. And you know, any denomination of any religion is not the truth. It's not. It's not backed up by the truth. So when you learn the truth as a Gentile and an Israelite, that is your shield. That is your protection. That is your inheritance. That is your promise. And the way you protect the truth and show the truth is to walk in it and to be in it consistently. It's the only way. While everyone is being hot and cold and lukewarm, you being consistent is a shield for you. Because the day you want to be inconsistent, is the day you want to be cold, is the day that trouble may find you, that it may right be at your door. And I said this before, and you'll hear me say this a lot of times throughout these entire episodes, is that we don't see what goes on beyond this veil. So when your mind is made up to transgress or to don't care or to backslide, it could be the last time you ever have that thought in your brain till the Most High gives you to a reprobate mind. It's okay, go on, do it your own way. And that is when, beyond that veil, those unclean rocks is at your door. Especially if you read the Testament of Solomon, how these unclean demons, these disembodied Nephilim spirits, fly about the air listening to conversations of men, listening. And they say that they fall, or they come into existence because of fire, because of destruction, or because of somebody has said something against you, and the Most High is allowing you to fall by a stumbling block and snare to this particular type of demon. While I was thinking about that, I was looking online at on Twitter, and it was talking about how this guy is using some AI engine. I don't know if it's called Claude or not, but I didn't investigate it yet. But there's an AI engine that this Asian guy out of Japan is using. And what he's doing is pretending to be a young Asian woman. Obviously, he has an OnlyFans account. And he has another account, I guess, that's like OnlyFans. And he's making $13,000 a month, pretending to be a young Asian woman. And it had me think about Ornias, which is a demon, another powerful demon. And he says, he goes into the dreams of men and he transforms himself into a woman and he plays with them. So some of you who are still in your lust phase and you're having wet dreams and you think you're sleeping with a woman or you think you're sleeping with your ex, most likely it is a male demon pretending to be a woman. I think about this myself too, because I fell victim to the same type of entity where I kept being visited by these female to have wet dreams when I was still in my lust phase. It takes fasting to get rid of it. It does. To truly get rid of it, it takes fasting. And you have to cancel out those images. You have to cancel out those dreams as soon as you have them. But it could be that male demon Ornias. So when I was thinking about that and looking at the state of AI now, this is nothing but demons being able to transform themselves now into being worshipped as AI. This is where demons are really going to come out. Because who thinks of this? Well, I can see why they think of it because of lack of money and resources. But who thinks of trying to OnlyFans and then creating an AI engine and pretending to be a girl, and then obviously people or men falling for it. Men are falling for men pretending to be women, just like this demon pretends to be a woman and plays with the hearts and bodies of men. Weird time, but everything that's being said is being poured out is coming from that Testament of Solomon. And I was also thinking about this before I go. When Yahuwah told the serpent that he would have a righteous seed, that seed will stamp the head of the serpent and your head would bruise his heel. The angels must have heard this, which is probably the reason why they thought, okay, let's have children of our own. If the Most High is going to eventually have children of his own, why can't we have children of our own? So this is where they had this whole meeting on Mount Hermon. They had to have knowledge of this is what the Most High was going to do. Mind you, they were in heaven with him. We don't know the conversations he had before he started to make this world and to make humans. But I guess because they were smart and they had the intelligence and knowledge that the Most High gave them, they could kind of allude to the fact that one day that the Most High was going to have children after he made Adam. I think about it. Did they know this? Did they know of Yahusha? Because it's talked about that Yahusha was already in existence before the world. He already knew that he was going to make Yahusha. It said that in Enoch, that Enoch saw Yahusha in heaven. He saw the lineage of time. He saw time. He saw the beginning. He saw the middle. He saw the end. So he knew of Yahusha. Wherever they had him out in the holiest of holies, in the highest of heavens, he seen Yahusha and knew that it came from Yahuwah. And it was explained to him by the angel that was with him. Now, the other angels that are trapped underneath the firmament, they have had at least known or heard of conversation that this was going to happen, that eventually the Most High was going to bring in a son to right the wrongs of man. So they must have thought, well, since we trapped down here anyway, let's have children of our own. And then it didn't work out. And then it didn't work out for them because obviously they started complaining to Enoch, asking him, hey, and the Most High said, look, I know what you're going to come to complain about. You are not, he told Enoch, you're not interceding for them. I'm going to make you watch your children be destroyed by each other. And when they did that, that's when we had those unclean ruachs. And then we go back to the Testament of Solomon. It talks about these certain demons that are ruled over by angels. And some of these demons come from the Nephilim of the children of the fallen angels that are still stuck down here, or the Watchers is what they call them. And they have to have control over their Nephilim ruach children. And then you go into Mestima, which is another chief prince demon that's had multiple demons underneath him that he pleaded with the Most High Yahuwah, said, allow me to have 10%. Let me have a tenth of the demons under my control and power to do my will. And you can cast the rest of them out or destroy the rest of them. And the Most High allowed this demon to have a tenth of these unclean ruachs. And people are like, why would the Most High do this if you knew that it was going to lead men astray and all that? Again, it comes to, you don't have to pay attention. They have no power over you if you don't let them have power over you. It's the same thing with Satan. And the reason why atheists bring up, why didn't he just kill Satan? Why would he kill his son instead of Satan? Why would he attempt to kill Isaac instead of Satan? Like, what, like, it showed in the whole back and forth with Abraham and Yitzhak that Satan didn't have any power when you didn't listen to him. Satan didn't force anybody to do anything. He had to ask permission to touch Job. He had to have permission to even talk to Abraham. He went to the Most High and said, you see my servant Abraham? You see how wise he is? He's like, yeah, he's wise, but he don't have a son. Like, the reason why he ain't really caring about you now, because he got his son now. He don't need nothing from you anymore. So I'm going to say, all right, you could try him in this matter. So Satan really doesn't have any power, because he needs for you to listen to him. He needs for you to fall through his subtlety. That's the only way he beats you. He's not standing at your door, sitting on top of your shoulder day in and day out, in your ear, making you do things. It don't work that way. It don't. In order to even get to Satan or get to Lucifer, you have to go through all these organizations. You have to truly be involved with sin. You have to truly be involved in wanting to serve him. That's why they set up all these organizations, these fraternal orders, and these occults and these secret societies in such a way to come through all these laws, these ordinances, these statutes that they have to go through on a day-to-day basis, even to be in the same realm as Satan. And they don't even get to see him, just like we don't get to see Yahuwah. It works the same, almost the same way, but on the opposite side. All we have to do is sit, and not really sit in our house, but all we have to do is be obedient to him. The feast days, the statutes, the ordinances, the offerings, and so forth. What Satan gets them to do is to embarrass themselves. What the Most High asks us to do is not even to embarrass ourselves. It's truly to prove us, to strengthen us, to guide us, to shield us. The people who worship Satan, it's an embarrassment for them. They got to do rituals. They got to do these goofy hand signals, and they got to hide them, but not hide them so you can see it. They got to put them in the corner of your TV screen or the corner on certain things so it looks like they're hiding it, but they're not, but it's hidden in plain sight. Like, they got to do all that. They have to have meetings on top of meetings to try to get you to be on their side, to follow their statutes and ordinances, when we are just promoting the scriptures that have been written thousands of years ago and say, hey, you might want to turn back into doing this. We have the easiest job, I think. Because it says in Yohanan 17 that those who are awakened are the ones that the Most High had already set up before they came into this world of who was going to be awakened or not. He already knows the number. And it's talked about this, and I think in Baruch, he knows the number of the grass. He knows the number of the clouds on a daily basis. He knows the drops of rain that touches the world. He also knows the number of souls that he wants in heaven with them. It's already numbered. Just like he numbered 144,000 Israelites, 12,000 from each tribe, he has known this number since the day of the Garden of Eden. He already knows this. The Most High doesn't see time the way we see it. He says he sees the beginning, the middle, and the end at the same time. So he knows the number of souls that he has already prepared in the end of days. He's already known this. We don't know it. It's only through our faith and our disobedience, our faith and our obedience and consistency that we truly know and convince ourselves that we are the ones that are awakened. We are the ones that are chosen. Gentile and Yasharel alike. When you understand this, you walk in that purpose and you don't let anything turn you from the left or the right. So whatever you're feeling or whatever you're going through on a day-to-day basis dealing with this world, Let that go. Because if you're struggling now, know that you are chosen for a purpose. You are only supposed to feel this affliction but a little while. And that's all it's going to be. That's what it's going to feel like, a little while. When Satan has his reign for 3.5 years, for 42 months, fam, you see how fast time is? A week feels like 3 days. A month feels like 2 weeks. A year feels like 4 months. So just imagine 3.5 years. It's going to feel like 1.5. It's going to go by so quickly. And it needs to go by so quickly so these people can't catch up to do what they're going to do. This is why I laugh at the whole, to go into this. This is why I laugh at the whole Kyle Busch incident and how it's connected to Wayne Gretzky and Kobe Bryant. There was a hockey game where Wayne Gretzky was one of the analysts. And they did a thing called the intermission report. At that time, the score was 4-1. The age where Kyle Busch died. They were in booth 113. Kobe Bryant was drafted in the first round, the 13th pick. Wayne Gretzky's birthday is the same day that Kobe Bryant died. So they want to connect the Kyle Busch fake death with Kobe Bryant's fake death. This is the subtlety that they're showing you. What came after Kobe Bryant's death? COVID, lockdowns, people losing their jobs, being laid off. Now they're coming back with Kyle Busch. A couple of races before, he goes, he talks in his little headset to his crew chief that he's not feeling well. So that already, they're laying the groundwork of him not feeling well. He won a $8.5 million lawsuit against a life insurance company. Said that he was sold some faulty insurance deal and they paid $10.5 million or something like that for, you know, he was scammed out of $10.5 million. They settled for $8.5 million. This happened this year, within this year. He talks about how he was sick. Then he dies from some very aggressive pneumonia because it came from sepsis or whatever. Then he dies. And then right before he dies, two times in two separate press conferences, he talks about how, oh, you never know when's your last one. And he makes a joke about this. Not once, but twice. And he's never said anything. He never said he was going into retirement, but he made that statement after his 69th win. Then you look at Kobe Bryant, his initials, KB, the same as Kyle Busch, KB. Kobe Bryant wore number 8. Kyle Busch drove number 8. I mean, you can do all the numerology all you want. You can go into all of the gematria. It's going to come out the same thing. It's all linked. So why would they do this? Through subtlety, they could be telling you they're getting ready to have more lockdowns. They're going to go back to having COVID lockdowns or norovirus lockdown or hantavirus lockdowns. You see how fast that hantavirus came and went. That norovirus came and went. Like I said, it's the subtlety. If you don't listen to it, you don't pay attention to it, it don't really have the same effect. Because time is going so fast, they're not really truly prepared for what really comes. And it has to come to an end. It has to. They would have to shut off the internet at some point. Eventually, people are starting to wake up more and more every day, are noticing because these rituals are too close together. Before, it was 9/11 and nothing after that we paid attention to. It was like maybe a decade between you seen until you saw the next little psyop ritual that they did on a mass scale. Now, because people are hip to it, they're releasing these rituals too close together. We had just had Charlie Kirk's assassination in September. Now we have another fake death. We got two fake deaths strong with another death, a Kobe Bryant fake death. It's three things being back to back. And then you had the Trump assassination, which was like a year or so. Like I said, this presidency is going so fast. The people are now pulling apart the fake Trump assassination thing where he got shot in the air. That was a ritual in itself. It was like a Jewish ritual because it says that the Gentile should something take a shot in the ear or a damage to an ear for something like that as a ritual. But people are pulling it apart is what I'm saying. So the more and more people are waking up, more and more hip to the symbolism, more and more hip to the rituals and the sobs, right after they happen now, they eventually, in order for them to get the beast system to work, they would have to knock out power. They would have to keep people in complete confusion where they can't pick anything apart. That's the final entrapment. But they're doing it through subtlety, and the subtlety is not even being subtle anymore. The serpent is not even hiding anymore. The Most High is manifesting all of this, and that's why he sped up time. Because now people aren't forgetting about the last ritual, the last psyop. It's all running together. It's all bleeding together. And I don't think they understand this part of it. I don't think they do. Because they still have to do these rituals and psyops. I don't know why they just don't pull back and say, all right, we need to really calm down. They're picking us apart. They're exposing us. They don't even stop. I don't think they can stop. So what are they going to do with Kyle Busch? They're going to hide him underground. This is why they gave you the TV show Paradise. Of this fake city underground. I guarantee you that's where Kobe Bryant is. That's where they're going to keep these people underground. Somebody posted the other day on Twitter or on X of R. Kelly getting his hair cut. I mean, he had an old iPhone, but he was smoking a cigar, which that's what R. Kelly does, smoking a cigar and getting his beard shaved. I don't know how old this video is, but he was passing it around. He said, I was at the barbershop the other day in Chicago, and he saw R. Kelly. He said he was going to ask him who he was, but he got up and gone, and he didn't get a chance to ask him. Now, R. Kelly's supposed to be in prison for 30 years. I said this before. He a Prince of Freemason. Why would he go to jail for being obedient to the type of worship that Satan requires? Blood and sexuality. And everything between. Anything that goes against the Most High. So why would he put his apostle, why would he put his priest, his pastor, his angel masquerading, these main angels masquerading as light, why would he put them in prison for doing exactly what they're told to do? So if he is out, he's just out here chilling or has been chilling. Just like I don't believe Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison. I don't think anybody who's been caught, these high profile Freemasons or anybody connected to the cult of Satan, are in prison for what they do. We don't know. We don't go to their jail cells and write them or, you know, show up to, for visitation day to see if we know that they're in there. We have never seen that. We didn't ever know Sean Combs was in jail. They told you he was in jail. They gave you little stories to laugh at. Like, oh, yeah, he's in there. He's not even in there. This is what they signed up for, to be used in this way. So I said, what's the point? What's the point in all this? It's to energy harvest you and also manipulate your thoughts on justice and judgment. That if it's being so lenient to those who are in a certain order or in a certain class of spirituality, then there is no God. That's what they really pointing their fingers at. That look, there is no God. Look how much we manipulate laws. This is how much we manipulate the system. There is no God. Because if there was really a God, he wouldn't allow this to happen. If there was really a God, he would destroy all of this already. Why is he not doing it? This is the trap that they're making you fall for. Is make you believe there is no existence of a God. And the Most High said this. He says, when people abandon hope, you know how far in reprobate mindedness that you have to go to? The Most High said that until when they give up hope, is that is when the time will awake. That is when I'll come back. You know how far down we got to go? We got to go into bestiality. We have to make that normalized. We still haven't made pedophilia normalized yet. They're very hands-on with this, but it's coming. But the bottom pit of that is bestiality. There was already a man that was arrested for having sex with his dog or caught having sex with his dog by his wife. And it was on camera because they had cameras in the house. Again, they released these certain, through subtlety, they released these stories to put it in your mind. And when that stupor has seized the inhabitants of the earth, they're not thinking before they're doing, they're just doing. So if their eyes see it, they're like, all right, this must be okay to do because now it's in mainstream. There's been more women being busted for having sex with underage kids than men who are teachers being busted for having sex or harassing underage kids. No one's talking about that, but it's being shown that women now are the biggest pedophiles. We've been so focused on men, so focused on the man doing it. Now it's women flying under the radar, and you're seeing constant stories of women who are teachers having sex with male students. So Satan is getting exactly what he wanted. He's diverting all the attention from the head of the household, bringing the woman over top of the man, and the women are not being held accountable for their actions and being coddled. That's exactly what he made the system to be. Because in order to destroy the child, you get to the woman first. You get the man out of the way, you focus on the woman. The woman removes herself from the child or the care of the child, and there you could destroy the child from the root up. And it's going to happen to a lot of people because, again, like I said before, the Most High has said it's a few that he wants. A few. He don't want everybody up in heaven with him. He don't want everybody or need anybody around him as far as large numbers. He said this so many times, it's basically truth. Mind you, he only need to say it once to me, but he said it multiple times that he only cares about the few. He don't care about the multitude that will perish, that was born in vain. He knows that he made this world for many, but the world to come for few. You need to understand what that number few is. If you are awakened and you can come back to his commandments, his statutes, his ordinances, you are of that few that he's investing his time in. He's not investing his time in everybody else. And you can clearly see that.